Coming up on Tech News Today, CNN may or may not buy Mashable, but Twitter definitely bought Posturus, and people as hotspots angering South by Southwest attendees. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Monday, March 12th, 2012. Tech News Today is brought to you by BigCommerce.com. E-commerce is an important part of doing business today. BigCommerce can help anyone set up an online store. From web design to accounting to marketing, BigCommerce provides you everything you need to run a successful online business. Get started today with this limited offer. 2 months free to build a fully functional store at no expense. Go to BigCommerce.com, click on the radio microphone, and type in promo code TNT. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
Yeehaw, I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Maya Zachter.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show where we kick around the tech news of the day, try to make some sense of it all. Joining us, editor-in-chief of Engadget, Mr. Tim Stevens. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
Now, have we properly thanked you in the past for being on the show that we nominated to the International Academy of Web Television, which then won us an award?
I don't think that we've talked since then, no.
Oh, okay. So you are as much a part of this award as we are.
We think you're this one right here, fry.
You're the second tallest fry.
That's you.
Yeah.
Thanks very much. I appreciate that. It looks more like the Fortress of Solitude to me, so I think that's a little bit cooler.
Thanks very much.
I'm glad that I could help.
If we pull the right one out, apparently we get a message from Jor-El. We just haven't figured that part out yet. Breaking right before the show started, Twitter acquired Posturus. And both sites have now made comments about it, and it is true. This is not a rumor. Twitter is going to keep Posturus alive for now. They said that their new Spaces offering is still going to continue to be available, that they'll let anybody know if anything about the service is going to change plenty in advance, but right now they don't expect it to. And everybody's thinking this is somewhat more than just an acquire, where you just acquire a company to get the talent, but they definitely wanted the talent as well.
Now, I've been using Posturus for a really long time, actually, because one of the easiest things it does, the original setup was you would just email Posturus whatever you were thinking, and that way you just had a blog. That was the entire setup. And they changed it a bit with this whole Spaces thing where it's more private sharing and things. But one of the bigger things about Posturus is all how easy it is to get your content on there. So you can just put it in as an attachment as you put in your posts. So I'm thinking with Twitter, hopefully we're going to see a lot more media in the actual streams and things. But I'm thinking they're going to kill Posturus in probably, I don't know, a year, because they don't seem to keep things around very well.
If Twitter can integrate Posturus smartly into what we know of in our Twitter feeds, it could be a really great thing. There's actually a Chrome extension that I've been using for a long time that allowed video inline. So if Tom, you send out a link to a YouTube video, I could just go ahead and play that. So if that's the sort of thing that Posturus would add to the Twitter experience, it's a little bit more like a Tumblr, Tumblelog type of a thing. I think that could be really smart.
Tim, what do you think? I mean, this story just broke, so we haven't got a lot of details other than what they've written on their blogs. Do you think Twitter will keep Posturus around? How do you think they'll integrate it? You got any ideas about that?
No, it's a little too early to tell at this point, of course. I mean, we can make some guesses, and I definitely think that we could see a much more media-friendly integration, as we've seen in some of the other Twitter acquisitions. But I also wouldn't be surprised if this is just Twitter taking some money and making what it thinks is a smart acquisition and building itself up a little bit more as a player on the social sharing front, getting beyond its 140 characters. So maybe this is just them, thinking a bit more broadly in terms of the kind of content, the way that they want to share or have their users share their content going forward, something like that.
I kind of feel like they will keep Posturus around and try to promote it. Now, they obviously won't keep it around if they can't make it a success, but I think this might indicate that Dick Costolo and friends are starting to think about Twitter as a larger company and not just a single product company and not just something that would get acquired eventually by someone else, but they want to be a player on their own, like a Facebook or maybe someday a Google. And this could be the first step towards that is saying, well, we're going to take Posturus, we're going to integrate their spaces into Twitter and make it better to show pictures in Twitter, and we're going to learn from all of that. But at the same time, we'll have another offering that takes some of the things we've learned from Twitter and applies it to, like you said, Tim, the maximum, the above 140 character postings. Whatever happens, it'll definitely be interesting to watch. Now we have some rumors, do we not?
Yes, we do. To the rumor mill, shall we? There it goes. And you couldn't see, there's a small box. There's a Nokia rumor this time. Nokia, apparently, according to Digitimes, they're saying that Nokia is going to get into the Windows 8 tablet game. Not Windows Phone, but Windows 8. We're using a Qualcomm dual-core processor. The Verge thinks it's going to be a Snapdragon S4 based on Qualcomm's roadmap. And it would launch in the fourth quarter of this year. Microsoft still hasn't announced a release date for Windows 8, so obviously it has to be around this time. Nokia apparently is outsourcing the device to Compal Electronics for the first batch of shipments, which is supposed to be over 200,000 units. So Nokia getting in the Windows 8 tablet game. That seems a little
obvious.
Yeah.
Of course. Of course they're going to get into it. Like, you know, that's not the big deal here. The big deal is, would Nokia become the flagship?
Like a signature
tablet.
Kind of,
yeah, exactly. Now that we have a little, we have some rumored details about it. Does it sound like the kind of device that would give the iPad a run for its money? That's what everybody wants to know. Who's going to be able to give the iPad a run for its money?
And the weird thing about this is I don't think that making the Windows 8 tablet is such a big deal for Nokia. It's really that the Nokia has like a privilege when it comes to Windows Phone that they can customize it a bit. So they can have a much tighter integration between the phone and their tablets, a lot better than I guess their competitors
would have.
Than the
Playbook and the BlackBerry Bold.
Yeah, something like that.
What do you make of the, I mean, these are obviously just rumors, Tim, but what do you make of Nokia and a Windows 8 tablet?
They're absolutely going to make some sort of a tablet, whether it be Windows 8 or some variation of Windows Phone that's more tablet-friendly. Definitely, there will be a tablet from Nokia. We've had the opportunity to speak with Stephen Elop a couple of times over the past few months. We're always asking him, you know, when is Nokia's next tablet going to come out? And he's always playing coy. I don't necessarily have a lot of faith in this particular rumor, though. It seems to me that, it's a Digitimes source report, so you always have to be a little bit skeptical there. But they didn't even know who the OEM would be in this case, which makes me wonder if indeed this is just someone at Digitimes making a logical conclusion based on something that we're all expecting to happen. So there's definitely going to be a Nokia tablet, probably running Windows 8. Wouldn't be surprised if it's this year. But whether it's Qualcomm-based, whether it's sometime by Q4, I think it's a little too early to tell right now.
I think this could be as simple as Nokia going around with a wish list to different manufacturers and saying like, okay, what would be your concerns about this? What would be your costs, et cetera, in preparation for actually, you know, having some serious negotiations? Could be nothing more than that.
Thinking about this, if Microsoft was going to say to Nokia, yeah, you're a partner when it comes to this, do you think that using a ARM-based processor is something Microsoft would want to do instead of going with an Intel with the full experience you have with Windows 8? I mean, it just seems a little strange that would be where, I mean, it makes sense why Nokia would do it. I just don't see Microsoft, like, you know, patting them on the back saying, yeah, you know, Windows on ARM, that's a total Microsoft experience.
It still remains to be seen exactly how Microsoft is going to push Windows 8. I mean, we're having a hard time figuring out exactly what Windows 8 on the tablet is going to look like from an ecosystem standpoint, because you've got the x86 tablets, which will have desktop access, and then the ARM ones, which presumably won't. So I wouldn't be surprised if indeed companies like Nokia, who are going to be focusing a little bit more on the hardware, would be focusing on ARM-based chips so they can have thinner devices with better battery life and that kind of thing. So I think that makes sense. I think if Nokia does indeed make a tablet, I think it will be an ARM-based system. But I'm not really sure what kind of support Microsoft is going to throw at hardware manufacturers for x86 tablets. That is the big question mark in my mind.
All right, let's stay in the rumor mill and talk about one that's tearing up Austin, Texas and South by Southwest. According to various sources, including the New York Times, CNN may be trying to acquire Mashable.com. Three people with knowledge of the talks say so, according to Brian Stelter of the New York Times. And Reuters' Felix Salmon reported on Sunday night that a CNN acquisition of Mashable could be announced on Tuesday. However, that's off the table now because they're not saying much about it. But early Monday, CNN denied that they would have any kind of announcement like that to be made. Also Monday morning, Pete Cashmore of Mashable sent an email to his staff, quote, rumor going around on Twitter that Mashable will be acquired this week is not true. And so it sounds like if you parse the various statements that there is not a deal for CNN to acquire Mashable or an announcement at this time. But that could leave it till next week if they can get things worked out. Sarah, are you hearing many people chatting about this in Austin?
Oh, am I ever. Yes, this is the talk of the town right now down at South by Southwest. Obviously, Mashable has a big presence here every year. This year is no different. And my first reaction this morning was, well, you know, CNN.com runs a lot of Mashable content online already. They have an arrangement already. So the two companies, they make sense already to me together. But it does sound like Pete Cashmore's denial is very carefully worded. Doesn't mean that it's not true. If you read between the lines of his email, it sounds like he's just not going to announce anything tomorrow. So, yeah, I don't believe that CNN bought Mashable and we're all going to hear about the terms and the valuation and everything come this time tomorrow. But I think it seems like a pretty logical partnership.
I completely agree with Sarah on this because CNN has been so forward to being social. They're like, oh, yeah, we'll put up your tweet reports or whatever silly thing that they put up, the iReport, that kind of thing. And considering how Mashable's been in the social space, it makes all the sense in the world to put them together, actually, now that I think about it.
Yeah, it certainly wouldn't be a bad thing for CNN. I guess it would be a good thing for all the folks at Mashable if the price is right on an acquisition. In fact, there were some jokes being made on some of the blogs about the fact that Adam Ostro, the executive editor of Mashable, had liked the Reuters story on Facebook, and somebody made a crack like what he likes is his stock options getting cashed in if it's true. hard to say if it's true, but it does seem to me that this is a conversation, at the very least, that is being had between CNN and Mashable. South by Southwest is the perfect place for these sorts of conversations to happen. And one could expect that maybe they were on Sunday sounding like they were really close to a deal, and then it just didn't pan out. And so a few things leak out like this, and they get to come back and say, no, we definitely do not have a deal right now, .. So we'll keep an eye on that, see how it goes. Let's take a break and thank our newest sponsor. We're welcoming to Tech News Today, BigCommerce.com. Now, all of us in the audience, come on, we all buy things online all the time. If you've got a business, though, and you're not generating sales from online, you're missing a big opportunity. Now, you may think it's going to be complicated. It's going to cost you a lot. Maybe you're thinking, oh, it's got to be some store where I let go control of everything. That's not the way it works if you use BigCommerce. BigCommerce makes it easy to set up and run a successful professional online business. BigCommerce is the fastest growing e-commerce company in the world. Brings you a complete set of features that help you build a successful e-commerce business from the ground up. They give you web design. They give you accounting. They can help sell your products through social networking sites. Things that you probably weren't even thinking were possible, BigCommerce can do. It's the solution to drive the most sales for your business right away. And we've got a special offer for you because you're listening to Tech News Today. Even if you're like, oh, my business is too small, check out this offer. Give it a shot. Here's the limited time offer for listeners to get started today. And there's no reason not to get started today when you get 2 months free to build a fully functional store with no investment, no expense, nothing to lose, everything to gain. Set up your free store today. Go to BigCommerce.com. Click on the radio microphone up in the upper right corner of the site. That's on the homepage. And then type in our promo code TNT. That's BigCommerce.com. Click that mic up there in the upper right corner and type in TNT and try it out right now. 2 months free. Go check it out. BigCommerce.com. We thank them for their support of Tech News Today. On to iPhone in China. Gartner has some numbers out showing that Samsung still has the lead in China, and it's getting bigger over Apple. According to Gartner, Samsung has 24.3% of the market for phones that play videos and games. Apple has 7.5%. And that is a 16.8 percentage gap that has increased since the last time Gartner put out a report. In fact, it's doubled from the third quarter. Samsung is the number one in that category, Apple number five. And the reason is because Apple's not available on China Mobile. You can't get the iPhone on the biggest operator in China. China Mobile has 655 million subs. That's bigger than most countries. That's bigger than lots of groups of countries. And that's two-thirds of the market in China. The reason they're not on China Mobile uses TD-SCDMA, and Apple doesn't want to make a special iPhone that uses TD-SCDMA. They say, at least according to China Mobile, that they're waiting for TD-LTE. Now, TD-LTE is the LTE coming to China Mobile supposedly by the end of the year. But then today, a minister of the Chinese government announced that China will likely wait another 2 to 3 years to issue licenses for LTE TDD networks because they want to spend some more time making 3G more widespread before they start converting 3G to LTE. So China Mobile may have a longer wait for the iPhone. The iPhone may have a longer wait to access that market and more effectively compete with Samsung, who's available on all the carriers. And yet you still got people throwing eggs at Apple stores in China when they won't open and sell them an iPhone when it's new.
In light of the government not issuing the licenses, do you think that would force Apple's hand at actually having to make a special phone for this market? Because if they wait for the LTE version to come out and LTE to be available in China, that seems like they would have such a disadvantage. They'll be fighting from behind for such a long time with sticking with that old phone on a small telecom. It's funny, when I saw that this number for the telecom they're on, the small one that has 137 million subscribers. That's the small one.
Yeah, that's the tiny one, I know.
So I wonder if they even, I mean, obviously they care, but 137 million subscriber reach is still pretty big.
It's early days for Apple in China. Tim, do you think Apple, not known for changing their ways, might get nudged into changing their ways if they have to wait 2 to 3 years?
Well, I think there are, you know, many, many facets to this story. Certainly, if China Mobile wants an iPhone, if they're willing to write a check big enough, Apple will certainly make them an iPhone. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But even if they were to start rolling out LTE by the end of this year, it would still be a long time before that network would be wide enough to really support a major phone like the iPhone. So if indeed Apple is going to come to that carrier, I think that they would need to support their format of CDMA regardless. So again, it gets back to how much the carrier is willing to pay Apple, and indeed is Apple willing to make this new version of the phone to support that carrier? Or is Apple happy to simply play with the other carriers and to kind of build them up to the level of the premier carrier in China? AT&T, you know, it didn't exactly leap heads and tails above Verizon when it got the iPhone exclusively. But AT&T was suffering a lot of churn before the iPhone came out, and that turned right around as soon as the iPhone came out. So maybe Apple thinks it can win with smaller carriers. It's too early to tell, I think.
Well, it's definitely the kind of thing Apple plays at, saying, yeah, okay, so we're 500 million people behind. Yeah, give us 2 to 3 years. We'll change that.
Yeah. If anybody can turn it around, it's Apple.
Yeah, absolutely. Khan Academy announced they have a new iPad app that has a lot of interesting features for educators in it. Time syncing between devices without an internet connection required. So if I start reading a lecture or watching a lecture on the app, I can then pick it up on a different device. Like maybe if I'm reading it or watching it on an iPad, I can pick it up on my phone and pick it up right where I left off. The devices sync to each other. I don't have to use an internet connection to do it. Interactive transcripts of the lectures, so you can scrub through and find particular parts and then go right to that part of the lecture. A transcript for just reading and searching as well. And they're trying to push this as maybe not a replacement, but at least a supplement for textbooks. A pilot program in the Los Altos School District, which is down in Silicon Valley here in California, has started using Khan's online lectures for a substantial portion of their learning. Now, the initial version of the Khan Academy app doesn't include the visualization tools and exercises necessary for a full classroom experience yet, but they do say they want to get to that point with it. And they're already, with this Los Altos School District, experimenting with which is called classroom reversal. Essentially, you watch the lecture on your own time as a student, and then you do the homework in class with the teacher so you can get better one-on-one instruction. In fact, TED is rolling out the TED Ed channel on YouTube, a dozen short videos, and they hope to have a whole lot more, maybe hundreds by the end of the year, created for high school students as well as lifelong learners, according to Chris Anderson at TED. And they're after that same thing of saying, let's flip-flop the classroom where you watch our TED lectures as your homework. And then when you're in the class, you do the discussion and the exercises and the application of what you learned in the videos.
I think this is one of the best ideas I've ever heard. And I'm surprised that it didn't come up sooner when I was in school. I mean, when you're sitting in a large class and the teacher's talking at you, you're supposed to be quiet. You're not supposed to be distracted by people around you. You're supposed to take notes. That makes perfect sense to actually have that lecture where you can use as homework in your own time so that when you get back to class, the teacher can actually spend time helping students with whatever questions they have or, you know, with math problems that they have to figure out type of a thing rather than us needing to, I don't know, hire tutors or, you know, figure it out and have a lot of questions. It sounds very, very intuitive.
The Khan Academy's iPad app. I mean, the fact that they included all this offline stuff to me, I think, is a real huge benefit. Because if you want to like improve what you're doing, or you want to learn some new stuff, I mean, the idea is you could be on a bus and you don't have to have Wi-Fi or 3G or anything, and still continue to learn. So I mean, that's what you could do with real books anyway. So why not have this capability? A lot of apps don't include offline access, which is kind of strange when you want to learn something. So I'm just really pleased about that particular feature of the Khan Academy app.
Now, okay, I don't have to do problems. Maybe I don't have to write essays outside of class necessarily. Maybe I do, maybe I don't. Depends on how the teachers run the classroom. But will I, as a student, be any more likely to watch the lectures as I am to actually do homework? I mean, kids skip homework all the time. Does it put them even farther behind if they skip the lectures? At least when you lecture to them in class, you know they're there.
I mean, that's up to the student, right? That's the real thing. If you're really trying to learn, then you'll watch these things. I mean, I watch TED Talks for the heck of it. So, I mean, I would assume that if they're interesting enough, hopefully that they're not doing a whole bunch of... I guess it depends on the video quality, actually. I was looking at some iTunes U stuff, and it's awful. Some of this, like, there's like a camera in the way back. You can't hear the students. You can't hear anything. So, I mean, if the quality is quite good, hopefully there's some entertaining teachers out there who can put together some good videos. I mean, hopefully that will be the draw.
With TED, you've got experts in the field.
Right, TED's got some great videos.
Those are great.
So hopefully Khan Academy's got the same thing.
Tim, what do you think? I mean, is this likely to engage kids? Or should, as Aya said, you know, it's up to the kid. They don't want to learn. Tough.
No, I definitely think it's a great idea, taking the non-interactive part of learning out of the classroom and then bringing the more interactive part into the classroom. I think that makes a lot of sense, especially for kids who maybe their parents don't have a lot of time to help them with their homework. I think it's fantastic. But I'm also kind of intrigued that this is another sign that we're going to see iPads in every classroom within the next couple of years. I mean, between the iTunes U, like you're talking about, iOS, and the textbooks that Apple just announced and all the other stuff going on, it seems like iPads are going to be the next classroom computer very soon.
And you know what? Everyone thinks, but that's expensive. Textbooks are expensive. Textbooks are much more expensive now.
Very expensive.
Textbooks at least don't go out of date as fast as an iPad, though. out every year.
People aren't trying to like steal your textbook most times. That's the thing. The iPad's if there was only like a really dumb iPad that only could run one app, maybe people wouldn't steal them as much.
But locked down.
Yeah.
But the not pad. All right, let's finish up with another South by Southwest story going on in Austin, Texas. People as hotspots. Sarah, what's going on?
Yes, specifically homeless people as hotspots. Homelessness is not a problem that is unique to Austin, but Austin does have a rather sizable homeless population and homeless shelters that are trying to work with these people as much as possible. So there is a homeless shelter called Front Steps who has partnered with a sort of an arm of a marketing firm. This arm is called BBH Labs. And what they've decided to do is outfit people who the homeless shelter Front Steps are already working with, who are already in their system that they're trying to help out with 4G Wi-Fi devices to act as hotspots. So people like me walking down the street who say, "Ooh, my 3G isn't working right now. I'm nowhere near, you know, my hotel for Wi-Fi." I can just ask this nice person here who's wearing a T-shirt that easily explains what his or her name is, and how what I can text to get onto this hotspot for a donation of my choosing. The donation could be any amount you want, although they suggest starting at like $2 for 15 minutes, which is extremely cheap. So the deal is then, okay, well, I could offer somebody cash for the hotspot that was given to me, or I could pay them through PayPal. And the way that works is, again, this homeless shelter is working with folks, so they would actually get paid every 2 weeks via PayPal. So this is an experiment, they're calling it, a charitable experiment that has been pretty well thought out. And it's actually not the first time that BBH Labs has dabbled in trying to get awareness out through kind of unique means with homeless. Back in New York some time ago, they had given about 6 homeless people free access to cell phones, text messaging, Twitter accounts, had gotten them set up so that they could sort of share their lives and their experiences with the world. That project was very well received. So this was sort of the next iteration based on what they had learned so far. they decided to launch at South by Southwest thinking, hey, you know, all anyone ever complains about is that they can't get online as much as they'd like to here. This is going to go over really well. Well, it hasn't. The company, you know, they say we're believers in providing a digital service that will earn these individuals more money than, say, a print commodity. So they're well aware that people selling newspapers on the corner is not necessarily the, you know, the best use of their time, that people are less interested in buying things like that. Hey, you know, 4G hotspot access, people want to buy that. People spend money on that all the time. Well, the consensus, I think, from what I'm hearing around is this has nothing to do with BBH's original experiment of letting us read the stories and learn about the lives and the plight of homeless people via social media. That's kind of what they did the first time. This is more what is being seen by many people as very demoralizing for homeless people. It's not incentivizing me to get to know anybody. It's just almost a little bit more of a gimmick for me to, let's say, hand someone $5 when I would just hand someone $5 anyway if I was willing to part with that money and give it to somebody that's homeless.
You know, I think the real problem here is the fact that that T-shirt says, I'm Clarence and I'm a 4G hotspot. And all the problems stem from there, because it's very easy to look at this on the face of it and say, these people are being exploited. They're being dehumanized. They're being objectified. All of us geeks with our geek guilt about our expensive gadgets and our first world problems are now exploiting these poor people so we can check our email. And it definitely smacks of that in all of the criticisms. On the other hand, if you talk or if you look at what's being written by Front Steps, the homeless shelter, which is a legit homeless shelter in Austin that cooperated in setting this up, they said, look, we went through all of our case managers. We found 10 people. I think there's 13 people, but they say they found 10 people that they felt would benefit well from this program. And they got very excited when they trained them on how to use the hotspots, gave them their T-shirts, and sent them out into Austin as small business people. Essentially, they, you know, without having to put any investment of their own, they're able to go out and sell what mobile Wi-Fi access. When you look at it from that side, it sounds like a great idea, right? You're setting people up to build some skills, get some technological experience, make some money. The money, apparently, that is what they say, all goes directly to the person who's out on the street with the Wi-Fi. This is not a way for BBH to make money. It's not even necessarily funding the homeless shelters themselves other than raising awareness. I just think that it looks bad when somebody's got some cheesy T-shirt, especially at South by Southwest, when you're surrounded by lots of people in cheesy marketing T-shirts out there flogging their products, till it looks very exploitative the way they presented it.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing is the way these stories are being written, it seems like these people aren't volunteering for this. These are volunteers who want to do this as a service. They want to make money because I mean, seriously, why would they want money? It makes a lot of sense. But the thing is, otherwise, they'll have to do things like what? Sell newspapers, which is something that happens. When I was in New York, a lot of squeegee cleaners, a lot of that stuff, you know, clean your windshield for you. If somebody needs to make money and there's a way to do it, and this is the way to do it, I really have no issue with this. The T-shirt thing, I think, is kind of important, actually. Saying to call them, I'm a 4G hotspot, is kind of strange. But at least you go, okay, what's the alternative? Somebody comes up to you and goes, hey, by the way, would you like to buy some Wi-Fi from me? Huh? I'm hotspot. Like the T-shirt thing, I think, is quick enough that people understand what's going on. Otherwise, it does sound a little exploitative.
Well, and I think a lot of people in the chat room already are jumping to conclusions like, how do you know they're homeless? If you asked them for blood, they're so desperate they'd do that as well. You know, that's not how this was done. This was done through an official homeless shelter, an accredited homeless shelter that works with people, has case managers that knows these people. This is, if you start to investigate it, a lot of these concerns that I definitely had when I saw the first headline about people being used as aerials, a lot of those concerns were definitely addressed by the system. Now, you know, I don't know. Tim, do you have any other perspective on this? Any other concerns that we're not bringing up?
I've been sitting on the fence on this story all day long, and I could feel myself teetering back and forth as Sarah was, explaining the situation. It feels like they've done all the right things when it comes to lining up these people, making sure that the right people are being selected, making sure that the people are being identified correctly, and making sure, of course, that they're presumably going to make some money out of this. But, you know, I still can't shake the feeling that this is in some way exploitative. And I don't know what the solution is there. I mean, it seems like they've done everything that they should have done to make this the right thing. But it still just feels a little bit wrong.
Well, if it weren't homeless people, if there were just folks out there legitimately, safely, and, you know, with city oversight selling Wi-Fi access points, this wouldn't be a story. So I think you're right. There's something to the fact that it's homeless people that makes you suspect that maybe they were cajoled into it or don't know what they're getting into. Or maybe it's just the contrasted guilt of saying this is not a person who could afford to use any of these devices that they are enabling to be used. And that part is sad.
I think that that Tom really does get to the heart why so many people hear the story and go, ah, that's awful. But it's sort of hard to figure out why. And I think that that is one of the main reasons is that some of the things that we all obsessively check our phones for, you know, or get on the internet for are not life-changing, save the world, help the homeless type of things. So the idea of that somebody who's really down on their luck providing me a service, you know, so I can get on GroupMe and update people where I'm going to go to barbecue next really rubs people the wrong way. Then again, hey, if there was a person sitting on the corner who's trying to start a conversation with me and, you know, because I do have $5 to part with, I mean, what's the alternative? It's not as if homelessness is a problem that's going away. I feel like it is a good thing that companies and nonprofit organizations are trying to think of ideas outside of the box to help people who need help. This just seems like, I hate to say it, just bad marketing. They kind of, you know, missed up on the marketing itself, which is funny because this is a marketing firm.
Right, because, you know, they are, again, allegedly, and I haven't gone and seen it for myself, but from all reports, the folks who are doing the work are getting the money. So at least that part of it works.
Correct.
We also, we're pretty sure they're delivering LTE, not HSPA+, but they are saying 4G. So it's hard to say.
No WiMAX.
Let's move on to news views. Instagram announced at South by Southwest that they have passed 27 million users. Co-founder Kevin Systrom stressed that all of the users who have been active within the last week, 67% of them used the app yesterday. So these are probably active users. Systrom also waved around an Android phone running Instagram, saying, in some ways, it's better than our iOS app. It's crazy. That Android app is not yet ready for a public walkthrough, though, and does not yet have a release date. But it's coming soon, and it does exist.
Something else coming soon. The Wall Street Journal is reporting that Intel is working on a web-based TV service which would work with Intel-powered set-top boxes. Intel is courting media companies to stream their content entirely over the internet and wants to launch the service by the end of the year, which might be an issue because Intel still doesn't have any content deals locked up yet. But rest assured, they are working on it.
Nokia's financial service, Nokia Money, is shutting down. The service launched last year, let subscribers deposit money and pay bills. According to a Nokia spokesperson, it's being shut down because it is not core to Nokia. The service will remain active for 3 to 4 months so subscribers can use up any money they've deposited in these accounts.
That's a big deal, the independent money transferring in places like India and Africa. So it's kind of sad to see Nokia moving out of it in some ways. Google's getting more secure by enabling SSL encryption by default on its search pages globally. However, only users who are signed into their Google accounts can be automatically switched to SSL in the coming weeks. So if you want your searches encrypted, people, sign in and let them track you.
You know what I'm going to order as a side with my ribs I'm going to eat later tonight?
What?
What's that?
Patton Wars! I think I might have just scared everybody on my hotel floor. Yahoo is officially suing Facebook over patent infringement in California. Facebook publicly responded by saying, "We're disappointed that Yahoo's effort to engage with us was limited to a few short phone calls and called Yahoo's move puzzling."
What do they want, like a Facebook message? I don't know. Anyway, Apple announced iCloud movie support last week, but there was a snag. No Fox or Universal movies due to those studios had deals with HBO. The Wall Street Journal reports that Fox is within weeks of a deal, and Universal is, quote, near a resolution, which should bring their movies to Apple. HBO already lifted some restrictions to allow Warner Brothers movies to be accessed on iCloud.
South by Southwest is often thought of as a place to launch new social apps. But everyone sit down, please. I have some bad news. South by Southwest is a murderer, and Gowalla is its victim. Actually, it has nothing to do with South by Southwest. Facebook bought the company 3 months ago. And if you go to the Gowalla site, you'll now be welcomed with a goodbye message that lets you know that you can download your data soon.
It's weird, too, because Gowalla is an Austin-based company. It's just the timing of this all is very unfortunate. BioWare is trying to clear up the Mass Effect 3 DLC controversy. DLCs are game add-ons that people buy for enhanced game experiences. Somebody claimed to have found a DLC on the Mass Effect 3 disc, which led people to believe that BioWare stripped out part of the game to make more money on DLC. Mass Effect producer Mike Gamble took to Twitter explaining BioWare wasn't doing that at all, and that the DLC and the game were developed together, but content was never removed from the game.
After a six-month competition sponsored by UK intelligence agency GCHQ, the UK has a cybersecurity champion in 19-year-old Jonathan Milliken.
We call for a champion!
And they have a champion. The competition involved 6 5-person teams going head-to-head and challenges including reconfiguring a network during a 15-minute attack. Milliken is currently a first-year computer science student at Jesus College, University of Cambridge.
Time for the randomizer.
Randomizer.
And IO9 has the story today about space trains. James Powell, George Mays, and John Rather at the Johns Hopkins Applied Physics Laboratory have detailed how a supporting 12-mile cable requiring only a fraction of the engineering know-how needed to hold up tethers involved in space elevators is all you need to start their Star Tram that would accelerate maglev trains to a mark of about 350 miles per hour up to 20,000 miles per hour, which is what you need for orbital velocities. Most of the tube would be at sea level. The exit point would need to be about 12 miles high, so that's why you need those cables. And then they think with the $60 billion that they would build this, which is cheap when you're talking about putting things into space, they could probably be able to send things into orbit for $50 per kilogram. Compare that to the current rates of $10,000 per kilogram for cargo and $100,000 per kilogram for people. That they think a ticket to space on a Star Tram would only cost you about $5,000. That's a lot of money, granted, but that's like first-class airline without pre-booking prices.
Yeah, I'm in.
How many billions of dollars does Apple have hanging around at this point? I think they could probably fund this, right?
I think they could do it with cash. You're right. Mm-hmm. The Apple Star Tram. Well, it'd be the iTram or the iSpace or something.
I hate to rain on everyone's parade here. I mean, but like, you know, this thing is going to be sticking off the earth. It's going to make that nice round shape look just ugly. You know, not
going
in my backyard. Not in my backyard, okay? Because a lot of people are going to have this.
No Star Tram in my backyard.
Homeowners Association will never backyards,
first of all.
Obviously, I'm kidding.
I think this is amazing. They actually say they would have to build it up near the poles. So they're looking at places like Canada, Greenland, Alaska, Siberia would be the best places because they have no native life forms. So
it might cost you more money to get to that location than to fly out of it.
Actually, yeah, that's going to add to your ticket for sure. I love this idea. I mean, it sounds perfectly possible. Like, all we need is a Kickstarter. And we're golden. On to the Star Tram and to the calendar.
NCAA fans on either iOS or Android 4.0 have a new app that streams every live game for a one-time fee of $3.99, all games. It's pretty cool. The app itself is free, even if you don't want to pay for those live games, and includes cool things like stats and clips, updates on how all the players are doing. Spotify is coming to Germany. The service expands there starting tomorrow. The six-month delay of Pottermore, I know, has upset some of you crazed Harry Potter fans. It's coming out of beta in April. That's what the Pottermore folks say. So we'll see if the server can handle the load. That was actually part of the reason for the delay, even in closed beta, because so many people wanted in. AT&T is expanding its 4G LTE coverage to 12 more cities, following, of course, the announcement of an AT&T LTE iPad that is selling like hotcakes. Cleveland's going to be the first city, and then AT&T says the other cities, such as St. Louis, New Orleans, even Staten Island, New York, are going to roll out sometime between April and early summer of this year.
So the heart of LTE is in Cleveland?
What's that?
The heart of LTE is in Cleveland? Yeah. Go ahead. Carry on.
That's actually kind of funny. Good luck.
Oh, thanks.
Because the heart of LTE. And finally, the WWJC, which is Jailbreak Con, is coming to San Francisco on September 29th.
See, I thought WWJC was what would Jason consume. I'm really glad that you cleared that up.
Yeah, well, it was the Migrate Fest in the UK, if you're familiar with that. The folks who brought you that will be bringing you Jailbreak Con in September. On to incoming.
Incoming message.
And we got an email from Derek, who's wanted to throw in a few thoughts in regards to conversation about the rumored discless Xbox console. In terms of backwards compatibility, both Sony and Microsoft have had issues. He lays those out. The UMD transfer program, the Xboxes that won't play the older games, et cetera, et cetera. But backwards compatibility doesn't bother Derek as much as the library. What interests him more is how a discless console would impact the gaming industry's relationship with GameStop, which is still by far the largest retail for gaming. Used game sales is still a huge issue for the gaming industry. Digital distribution seems to be one solution, at least to publishers and developers. Problem is, the used game market also makes a huge part of GameStop's profits. It would be interesting to see how GameStop would respond should Microsoft, and possibly Sony, go down this route. Tim, you were expressing some reservations about having to continue to buy discs.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised that Derek seems concerned for GameStop. Probably the least favorite part of gaming for me is actually going into a retail establishment and purchasing a game. Inevitably, they try to sell you the used version, which is all scratched up, or they try to get you for a magazine subscription, or they want you to pay for some kind of a warranty. For me, it's much better to download my games and play them on my console. So I'm surprised that he's concerned. But just so you know, GameStop is making a lot of investments in digital distribution. And of course, there are a lot of things like you can buy gift cards, for example, that will unlock online content, that kind of thing, which is also something that GameStop is working on. So for now, GameStop is in pretty good shape. But yeah, down the road, it's hard to envision a future of gaming retail stores when nobody needs to go to a store to buy their games anymore.
But I don't think we need them. You know, if I'm going to go to GameStop in the future, it's going to be to buy the console maybe, or to stand in line and get some collector's edition or something that has action figures bundled into it that I can't get just by downloading. I mean, that's the future of that. And you're right, Tim. They're doing a lot to try to get ahead of that by getting involved in digital distribution.
All right, next email from Josh Johnson in Greenville, South Carolina says, "Hey, y'all, just wanted to clear up the voice dictation issue. If you put your phone in airplane mode and then you go into notes and try to dictate something with your voice, you can't. The microphone is even missing from the keyboard. I'm pretty sure this indicates that voice dictation needs the internet to work. Love the show."
And it definitely does. We actually spoke with them at the announcement of this feature, and they confirmed that internet connection is required. This is happening remote from your device. So, unfortunately, there's no way to do it on your device.
That clears that up.
Final email coming all the way from Norway. I'm going to butcher your name, buddy. Einar.
I just call him Einar.
Einar. So he says, "Hi. When I listen to your show, TNT 454 for Friday, March 9th, 2012, at my phone, I thought my FM radio had activated itself. It had not. It was the feminine voice of Tom Merritt, which had spoken in Norwegian. Your pronunciations and choice of words was perfect, and no Norwegians will be offended."
I'm glad to hear that. You know, that was the Say Hi app. I don't know if we have it potted up still, do we?
And it's off the board.
But it wasn't me saying it. It was actually the Say Hi app. I have it set up for Spanish now. See if it is.
Soy Laura Linney, y este es un clásico de la obra maestra.
Yeah. That sounds just like you, Tom.
Right, it does. You know, Microsoft's working on some technology that actually does this, but then uses your voice. It, like, tries to mimic your voice. So that's kind of crazy. That's it for this episode of Tech News Today. Thanks, everybody, for watching or listening, and thanks for submitting in our subreddit. TechNewsToday.reddit.com is the place to go to make your voice heard about what stories we cover on the show. Tim Stevens, thank you so much for joining us today. It was great to have you along. Let folks know what's going on over at Engadget.
Oh, right now we've got a lot of people recovering from South By and from the Mobile World Congress still, and just cranking on the news at the moment.
Excellent. Engadget.com, the place to go. You can find us on the web at twit.tv/TNT. You can email us, tnt@twit.tv. Give us a call and leave us a voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW.
A short one.
Sarah Lane will be back in the house tomorrow. We'll also have Lloyd Case on the show as well. We'll see you then.